in stores nationwide.
I'm David Ropeek, and this is The Connection. The First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution says it plain and clear. Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech or of the press. But some say those freedoms are being attacked today, violated, not in a frontal assault by censors, but in an end run by Wall Street. Investors, anxious to squeeze that last buck of profit out of newspapers, are driving decisions based on business rather than journalism, dollars rather than public information. To the bean counter, say critics, all that matters is readership and ad revenue. And if cutting coverage at the state capitol to leave room for more celebrity gossip gets people to buy the paper, profit margins stay high, and who cares about the rest? This story goes far beyond the newsroom and the shareholders' meetings, the inside stuff. We're talking about what you and I know and need to know. We're talking about nothing less than what some call a crisis of democracy. Connection listeners, what should be the responsibility of your newspaper to its community? Have you seen the profit-seeking acts affect your paper? Or is there a way good business and good journalism can coexist? The number to call is 1-800-423-TALK. That's 1-800-423-8255. Or you can join the conversation online at theconnection.org. I am joined in the studio now by Jay Harris. He is former publisher of the Knight Ridder-owned San Jose Mercury News, who resigned his post this past March instead of making cuts he thought went too deep. And joining us from Silver Spring, Maryland, is John Morton, industry analyst, who's been watching the newspaper business develop for the past 30 years. And later in the program, we'll speak with a CEO of a major newspaper chain and a managing editor at a paper facing these tough economic times. But first, welcome Jay in the studio and John from Silver Spring. Thank you for both being with us.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you, John. Jay, catch us up to what happened in San Jose. You woke up one morning and had had enough, it sounds like.
To tell the story briefly, business was bad in San Jose, as it is in newspapers and TV stations all around the country. And I had been working with our corporate management to decide what we should do. And obviously, some degree of adjustment was necessary and appropriate. But what was called for or asked for under the circumstances was ultimately something with which I disagreed, something that I felt that was neither in the a long-term interest of shareholders or good business strategy, frankly, in the long term in terms of the health of the franchise, because it would weaken the quality of the newspaper that we gave our readers.
It really would have weakened what readers got.
Oh, absolutely. I think that if you have in a single year a significant reduction, not only in the amount of space in the paper given over to news and other forms of information, but also a significant reduction in the news staff, that will have a noticeable and consequential effect in the quality and the breadth of the news report, and that readers will know the difference. And I think that ours is one of the sorts of businesses which has a public trust. Should not have those sorts of wide swings in quality from year to year.
Some stay and fight. You resigned.
Well, I had been in my post for 15 years, and I had been a Knight Ridder, rather, for 15 years and publisher of the Mercury News for 7. The part of leadership, it seems to me, is the ability to lead with an honest conscience. And I did not feel that I could, in good conscience, continue to lead and to say both to the staff and to the readers that what we were doing was as good as it should be or the right thing to do.
Conscience.
Conscience.
John Morton, the conscience of Wall Street has more to do with quarterly numbers than with the amount or quality of content. You've been watching this for a while. Is this just the current economic downturn? The San Jose Mercury News is in Silicon Valley. I imagine his ad revenue is down. Or is this, as many suggest, a much longer-term trend that isn't just about cuts, but kind of dumbing down and screaming up the content to maintain margin?
Well, that's certainly what's happened. You know, when newspaper companies started going public back in the 60s and early 70s, Wall Street had a much more long-term orientation at that time. And I think the newspaper companies that went public didn't think they really had to worry about, pressures from Wall Street. They just would do their job, publish good newspapers, and everybody would benefit. What's happened is that Wall Street has changed dramatically. It has become very short-term oriented. Some of this has to do with the fact that for a lot of investor analysts, some of their compensation is based on the price levels of the stocks that their funds invest in. So that creates a pressure on them to own stocks that always go up. And the way to do that is to have companies whose profitability always goes up. And it's created a situation in which Wall Street really, I don't believe, cares much about the long-term effect. What they're interested in is what happens in the next quarter, and maybe for a real long-term view, what happens this year.
John, let me read you some interesting statistics. Since 1990, as I've been looking this up, the profit margins of newspapers have gone up 50% on average. And at the same time, overall readership of newspapers is down 15%, and don't blame it on TV. Local viewership is down 20%, network viewership down 50%, news magazine readership is down 50%. You kind of want to scream, hello, Earth, to the news business. You're changing your content in pursuit of readers and viewers and getting it wrong, and they're going away, and it's bad for long-term business. Don't the smart Wall Street suits get that?
Well, they get that, but the fact remains that the newspaper business is still a huge and very profitable business. And even though readership is down, I mean, there are a lot of explanations for why that has happened, but even though readership is down, it is still a very large and profitable business, and one in which Wall Street remains interested.
But are they trying to squeeze the last golden egg out of the golden goose and shooting them in the head down the road? Let me ask you, Jay, your paper was still making money, wasn't it? And by the way, gentlemen, I encourage you to speak with one another and me. Thank you.
First, I would say that the Mercury News was and continues to make a very, very healthy profit and has done consistently so over the years.
What kind of numbers, broadly, if you can share them?
Well, I would say that the profit margin of the Mercury News has ranged between maybe a low of 22% in the last recession and a high of 29%. But going back to one of John's points, I think one of the challenges that newspapers face as a consequence of the pressure from Wall Street and some large shareholders for consistent and sustained increases in profitability is that that is something that can be accomplished without hurting quality in a growth environment. But in an environment like the one in which we are currently, the only way to do it is through substantial reductions in cost. And if you are driven in that reduction, not by a careful analysis of what is the wisest and most prudent level of cut that one can make while still maintaining the quality of the newspaper, but rather by how much do I have to cut in order to get to the number I need to satisfy the analyst or the shareholders, then that leads to a counterproductive and at times destructive management of the business. As John has said, and John is one of the very astute analysts of the American newspaper industry, it leads to a short-term emphasis which really works to the devaluing of the franchise in terms of its long-term health and vitality.
John, do the people in Wall Street buy? Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to add here that it's ironic that Wall Street takes the view that all they're interested in is the welfare of the shareholders, meaning them for the most part. I mean, these are institutional shareholders. Yet the attitude they take about this, the short-term orientation, really in the long run undermines the interests of the shareholders.
Well, these guys went to college. Don't they get that?
I don't think they do. Or I think they, because of the pressures they're under to show, constant increases, I think they don't worry about it. I mean, they feel I've got to worry about my bonus this year and next year. And hang the long term, and that basically, I think, has become the prevailing intelligence.
John, I would add, I think you're right, and I would say actually that I think it is a treadmill that many are trapped on. Corporate managers, significant stock shareholders, as well as analysts, and it is a treadmill that people are running faster and faster on simply because they can't figure out a smart way to get off.
Well, that's true. And, and of course, as we, you've noted earlier in this conversation, newspapers aren't green bean canners. I mean, they do something different from just issuing a product that, that's nice to have. I mean, what a newspaper does, because only newspapers really are economically organized to provide a mass amount of news and advertising and other kinds of information, is a very important component in the way our democracy works. And to undermine that role for whatever reason, I think is detrimental, not to the nation as well as to, in the long run, the shareholders.
Thank you, John, for bringing it back to what this is all about, which is not insider baseball for journalists and rich guys, but what the public knows in a democracy. Jay, you said in something of yours that I read, when the interests of an informed electorate and citizenry in a democracy collide with shareholders' interests in maintaining profit, both legitimate interests, who should win? You asked the question. Now I'll ask it to you.
Well, I think that what one needs constantly to do is to strive to achieve the right balance. But in the end, newspapers managed with principle are a public trust. And the reality is, as John has alluded, regardless of how advertising is doing or how the economy is doing, the needs and interest of readers for news about their community, their nation, the world, do not go up and down. So it's not as if one is able to cut the amount, the depth, or the breadth of the news report in cycle with the economy. And that is the attempt to do that is one of the things that serves not only readers, but the nation poorly.
And yet,
I might point out as well that, newspapers are very, very profitable. And and this may be a dream, and I'm sure it would be one that the Jay would resonate with. Why can't a chief executive say to his or her shareholders, this is going to be a tough year, our profit margins are going to drop 5 or 6 points. The only way we can keep that from happening is to undo some of the investments we've made in quality. We don't think that's smart for the long run, and we're not going to do it. Unfortunately, that's not the position that publicly owned chief executives take.
And we'll be talking with Gary Pruitt, who is a chief executive, later on in the program. For now, I want to thank John for joining us. Your insights are helpful about the role that Wall Street plays in all of this. Connection listeners, we're talking about the corporatization of the newspaper business. You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You're listening to The Connection on NPR.
From Boston University, this is...
Connection listeners, welcome back to a conversation about the conflict between shareholders and journalism in newspapers today in America and what some are calling a crisis of democracy because we're knowing less, perhaps, than we should. You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We are joined by Jay Harris in the studio, former publisher of the San Jose Mercury News, who quit over this issue as a matter of conscience, he said. And now from by Suki Dedarian, assistant managing editor for the Seattle Times, and by Gary Pruitt, CEO of the McClatchy Newspaper Company, who yesterday was talking with his shareholders. Thank you both for joining us.
Hi.
Yeah, good to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. Jay, let me ask you first so that we get very real about this for our listeners, because I don't want this to be inside baseball. What does this corporate pressure mean in details of what they see or don't in their newspapers?
Well, let me try to give you examples of how it can have an impact. First, when you see significant staff cuts in a single year, one of the things that happens as a consequence of that is that you have a contraction of the number of editions which provide more in-depth local coverage of specific areas. Some may say that doesn't hurt in the near term. That may be right, but it does hurt in the long term because local news about local government, local schools is important. Beyond that, if you have cuts not only in the news space budget, but also in the operated budget, you're really losing the money that allows for things like reporters travel, major projects, polling, computer analysis of investigative data.
Big investigations?
And, yeah. I mean, will some go forward? Yes. As many as would have? No. There's not as much to go around.
Suki, let me ask you. You're on the front lines of having to deal with these cuts and put out a newspaper that you as a journalist can be proud of. What have these pressures meant to you? And I should put into context for the listeners, your paper is kind of co-owned by a local family.
Right.
And a major national chain. So in that context, what have these cuts meant to the readers of your paper, the Seattle Times?
Well, let me give you a little bit more context there. Our family, the Blessins, have asserted as one of their core values the fact that this company will serve the community through quality journalism. And while we've been hit by this, the same economy that's hitting the rest of the industry, that is one of the guiding lights as we sort through the cuts that we need to make. And we've worked hard to try and preserve the core function of our newspaper, and we have tried incredibly hard not to carve into the bone of our operation.
But Seattle's about to leave, and the dot-coms are going bust in Seattle, and you must face a shrinking ad hole, not only in the cyclical economy, but over time. What has it meant to your readers?
We have, as Jay referenced, we aren't doing zoning in which the local news is customized for various communities. We have we actually use less newsprint today because newsprint is a great expense and the cost of that has been going up, which means sections aren't being published. Perhaps instead of a food section, you have a food page. Other newspapers and other colleagues of mine have presided over dramatic cuts in their newsrooms, and we've seen cuts as well. All sorts of content is going by the wayside, and newspapers, this is the biggest change I've seen, the biggest belt tightening I've seen in the industry since I've been in it.
Gary, is this the current cycle, first of all, or is this a longer-term trend as Wall Street has gotten more short-sighted and as the playing field in the information market has changed? We have more newspapers. We have, in some places, TV stations, internet, cable, and so forth. So everybody is competing for the same information consumer and screaming louder or pandering and changing content, not just cutting, but changing the nature of content to try to get more readers and to stay on top and so forth. So first of all, is this short-term or long-term? And second of all, as a CEO who has to deal with this, how do you reconcile these conflicts?
Okay. Lots of meat there.
Yeah.
It's both a short-term and long-term trend. We're certainly seeing a cyclical economic trend, and the newspaper business and all media relying on advertising ride that cycle. And so we know there are going to be downturns, and we know that there will be upswings as well. I think the most troubling piece of this is that most media companies seemingly don't manage with that expectation, but we do know it will happen. And so we have sort of a boom and bust mentality that results. And media companies sometimes bulk up in good times and then lay off and cut back in bad times and take their readers and their employees on a roller coaster ride as opposed to keeping a more even operational keel. That's the sort of current cyclical trend. Longer term, you're exactly right. There's been a proliferation of media outlets, and most media are losing share. Most media outlets are losing share as the number of television stations, radio stations, magazines, internet sites proliferate. Newspapers' big advantage is that in most markets, there's only one daily newspaper, sometimes two, and usually not more. And so it's important for newspapers to hold on to that mass audience and differentiate themselves in that way. So even if newspapers have a difficult time growing circulation, it's important because they bring cohesion to a community and bring more in-depth news to a community than any other media. So it is important for newspapers, I think, to maintain their quality as a public service.
A couple thoughts, Gary. First of all, you noted that a lot of markets only have one newspaper. We should point out that that didn't used to be the case, and that's part of what's going on long term in what Tom Kunkel and Gene Roberts in their forthcoming book, Leaving Readers Behind, call the most momentous change in the newspaper industry in its 300-year history. Another thing worth noting, I've always found it ironic that it's newspaper where the medium comes second and the news comes first, and TV news, where the medium comes first and the news comes second. Talk about the importance of this, the role of newspapers in a democracy being the fundamental source of what people know.
I think that's right. I do think newspapers serve readers and a community in a different way than other media, at least for the most part, because they bring greater depth and analysis to the community, and they have more readers than any television outlet has viewers. And so it brings a sense of cohesion so that citizens and can participate with a common base of knowledge. And you see the effect of that when there's a newspaper strike and a newspaper doesn't print. Civil discourse and activity and participation in a community plummet. And so newspapers are critical to democracy, and therefore it's a very relevant debate. What does Wall Street's effect have on the quality of journalism, because it goes right to the heart of the First Amendment?
Gary, this is Jay Harris. I would add to what you've said that I think that newspapers, because of the breadth and depth of their reporting and their reporting staffs, tend to set the local news agenda for other media as well. So, in fact, it is what we cover initially in our newspaper and on our news pages that tends to drive the more serious part of the radio and television news agenda in most communities.
Jay, you can't be more right. Excuse me. I was a TV reporter in Boston for 25 years, and for many of them, I'd walk in the morning and my story assignment for the day would be a clipping from a newspaper.
And I don't know how many mornings I've driven to work and heard stories that were on the front page of my newspaper being read by radio reporters. And the stories that they would grab were the ones that were the enterprise, the investigation, the independent work of the reporters and editors in our newsrooms, doing, as Jay said, setting the agenda. And it's a lot harder to do that kind of journalism with smaller staffs and smaller budgets.
You hit it on the head, Suki. Connection listeners, we're talking about the conflict between profit and journalism. Can they coexist in a democracy? Please join our conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And Amy is on the line. Amy, welcome.
Good morning. I'm just concerned that we might miss over the fact that it's not just a matter of cutting back to save money, but it's also about focusing the content. And by way of example, to make content more in line with the interests of shareholders of both that industry and others is the fact that there used to be several thousand labor reporters in this country a few decades back, and now we're down to just a couple. And then the focus on business news over taking labor news, for example, over the past few decades, and that the content is actually being shaped to serve the interests of, for example, the people that buy ads and the people that stand to benefit from the public having certain perceptions about the state of the economy, the state of working conditions, etc.
I'd like to be able to respond to that one. I can see how people might get that impression, and perhaps there are newsrooms and newspapers that do that. It's not done in mine. The news content and the news agenda is set in the newsroom, and in fact, our publisher has stood up to to all sorts of pressure from external forces when we have challenged institutions in our community. I worked for a McClatchy newspaper, and it was never the case there either. It does, however, reduce the number of reporters you have on the street, and it does reduce the ability to cover your community as thoroughly and as in-depth as you'd like to. But generally, those beat assignments and those story assignments are made in the newsroom and not in the boardroom.
Amy, do you see a change in whatever newspaper you read?
Well, just in general, the awareness of the stock market, for example, like, you know, 1% of the population owns 50% of the stocks, and a lot of people own some stock, but not very much, and it's usually in their retirement accounts. So just the focus of that, for example, always, you know, it used to be just there's certain business papers, like Wall Street Journal and stuff, that you'd expect to see that on the front page. But now that's something that's just becoming central to pretty much all media. And you know, then there's also issues about people getting fired for the content that they actually reported on. For example, it's a TV example, but the reporters in Fox News down in Florida about that went up against the interests of Monsanto, and they were actually forced to rewrite their story 83 times to the point where they resigned or were fired, I'm not sure. I think they were fired, actually. And the person at the Mercury, Gary Webb, you know, I guess Jay could speak to that more accurately than I, but who reported on the issue of crack cocaine in South Central L.A. and the CIA connection, how he was driven out. And I know there was someone with Chiquita Banana challenging their labor practices and actual, you know, possible terrorism.
And that was in
Guatemala.
Cincinnati, as I recall.
Yes,
Amy, thank you for your call, although I think there were questions of legality about how he acquired his information in that one, as I recall. Jay, the situation at the paper with that specific, but all of our participants, this question of content, not just whether we do or don't cover stories, but the dumbing down, the pandering, and also the screaming up with the headlines and the gross pictures to attract viewers. Comment on all of that.
Well, I would make two points. The first is that I think an issue related to the question that Amy raises is the increasing conglomeration of news organizations into enterprises, larger enterprises, which have different values and purposes as their mission and core. So you look, for example, at ABC now being owned by Disney, CBS merging with Viacom, NBC, a part of GE, or CNN and Time being owned by AOL. And all of the parent companies, if you will, in those situations have really very different agendas, and that is really a challenge. The other concern, and there was an article in the New York Times this week about the fact that the news weeklies, Time, Newsweek, and U.S. News and World Report, are for the most part no longer in the news business. They are much more likely to focus, as the Times said, on lifestyle issues than on life and death struggles overseas. And I think in both instances, readers are poorly served, particularly as citizens, by a greater focus on entertainment, on that which appeals to the lowest common denominator, than on the information they need as citizens.
We have Gail on the line. Gail, thank you for joining us.
Hi, thank you very much. I'd like to say that I'm a media professor, and I teach courses on what goes on, actually, in the media. And one of the things that's interesting that's not been addressed, and I totally agree with Amy, I think she's completely correct, is that there is a fundamental contradiction in our society between the needs of capital and the needs of the people. And the contradiction is that the needs of capital is that they have to legitimize their position as capitalists, and they have to legitimize an unfair position. On the other hand, what they can't do is they cannot, and they do this all the time, they cannot in any way critique what's going on because, as we know, they get fired. And also, it's not just being fired. There's this whole thing of self-censorship that goes on in the news. And I've spoken to and given lectures to many journalists, and I'm so astounded by how little they know. For example, at one point, I gave a lecture in New Jersey, and virtually none of them had heard of Noam Chomsky. And this was all the journalists in New Jersey had to do this lecture as sort of a professional day. The other thing is that you can go into England and you can buy the Telegraph, which is a right-wing newspaper, and you can also buy right next to that the Guardian or the Independent, where you get a more left-wing account. Now, one of your speakers said that the good thing about America is there's one newspaper and it causes a sense of cohesion and a common body of knowledge. Well, we don't all experience the world in the same way. There is not a common body of knowledge. What it means to be rich and to be making a fortune off the stock market is very different to what it means to the workers who are basically thrown out of work so that the companies can move to third world countries to maximize their profits.
Excuse me, Gail, let me interrupt because I want to get Gary Pruitt, who is a CEO and at the conflict point on this exact question. To answer the question, we have 2 minutes before a break, so Gail, forgive me for interrupting. Gary, you were talking to your shareholders yesterday. Here we are hand-wringing about democracy, but you were talking about Bucks yesterday. How do you deal with that? Covering this issue and not shooting yourself in your head to the investors.
Well, McClatchy is taking a different view than most other newspaper companies, which is probably why I was the CEO who agreed to be on this show.
Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, we're not cutting Newshole at all. We have no plans for layoffs. We are trying to take a longer term view. We're trying to persuade shareholders to take a longer term view. To the caller's point, in terms of what newspapers' content is, and I do think it's unfortunate that there aren't more diverse voices in the media. But the truth and the economic reality is there's going to probably only be one newspaper in most markets, and therefore it is important that the quality of that newspaper be maintained. However, when we determine content of newspapers, it's done by editorial discretion and based upon information on readership studies. We're not trying to tailor it to the owners or to advertisers' needs, but rather to readers' needs. We know that if we can, and to what we believe is important to furthering knowledge in our community. I do think some of the issues she raises. Raise broader structural issues about capitalism and the critique of Noam Chomsky in his book Manufacturing Consent and whether media in a capitalist society can ever be truly trusted in that sense. Without getting into that depth, I would say that we are...
I tell you what, I'm going to let you say it after we come back from the break. The music means we have to go to a commercial. You're listening to The Connection on NPR. Stay with us.
From Boston University.
Connection listeners, welcome back. Profits versus journalism in America's newspapers. Gene Roberts and Tom Kunkel say in a book that's coming out, Leaving the Readers Behind, that this is now a world where media conglomerates rule unchallenged. Those, after all, now I'm adding myself, are the conglomerates who control the printing presses. We've not read a whole lot about this out there. The public isn't aware this is going on. And may I point out that the top three newspaper owners in America, Gannett, Knight Ridder, and the Tribune Company, in that order, control a quarter of the newspapers in America. We're not reading and learning about something we really ought to know about this very issue. Jay and Suki and Gary, join in, please.
Well, I would agree with that. I'm reminded of something that the famous Baltimore columnist A.J. Liebling said many years ago, which is that freedom of the press belongs to those who own one. It is true that, and I think that all papers, certainly Knight Ridder papers, report on the news event. The news of my resignation and the reasons behind it were reported. A major speech I gave to the American Society of Newspaper Editors was covered fully and fairly. That said, with several notable and distinguished exceptions, the press does not cover itself as a social institution as aggressively or as persistently as it covers other institutions in society. If, for example, the sort of cuts that we see now going on in the news industry were happening in 1 year in local hospitals, it would be an enormous story. It would be news every day, and we would be all over it. You don't see the depth or breadth of coverage and analysis of that. And I think one of the very important things here is that the public is, I think, largely unaware and must be made aware of the slow but steady erosion in priority that's given to reporting in the public interest, to the sort of significant journalist that makes citizens better informed and therefore better able to perform their role in a democracy.
Gary?
Yes.
The McClatchy paper controls the Sacramento Bee, the Minneapolis Star Tribune, the Raleigh News and Observer, the Anchorage Daily News, important papers in their cities and state capitals. Are your readers reading about this issue, learning about it, so they're informed citizens about this issue?
Oh, I think they are. Actually, it's one of the first things Jay said today that I probably disagree with. I think the media loves covering themselves. I think they like to talk about themselves and cover themselves, and the issue is probably getting quite a lot of airing, perhaps disproportionate compared to job losses in other industries. I think people are aware that the cuts are being made in media generally, and our reporters and papers certainly don't shy away from covering that.
Gary. I can tell you that my newspaper has been in the news a great deal. We went through a 49-day strike between November and January, and we covered ourselves. It was difficult, but we covered ourselves, and other media did as well. And in addition, the national media has written a great deal about our publisher because of his efforts to maintain the private, independent family ownership, and because it has demonstrated the kind of values that we've talked about. And he and Tony Ritter have had conflicts about that. So I feel like I've read a lot about my newspaper over the past year.
Let me say quickly, and I'm not sure, Gary, that you and I disagree on this point as much as you might think. I think we cover ourselves on the surface, if you will, quite well and quite frequently. So we cover staff cuts, we cover news hole cuts, we cover product consolidation, we write about Frank Blethyn or Tony Ritter. What I think we don't write enough about is what the consequence of that is for the public. Let me stick for just a brief moment with my hospital analogy. If the staff of local hospitals was cut 10% in 1 year, if the time allotted for medical work at that hospital was reduced by 10% in 1 year, we would not only report the fact of that, I think we would cover in some depth and on a sustained basis the consequence of that for public health, what that means to our readers, what it means to the community.
The broad issue.
Yes, and I would like to see us report more for the public on the consequence for them. What is the public's stake in this, and how is it affected?
And I agree with that, Jay. I think that is a point well taken, and I'm sorry if I misunderstood your earlier point. I do think in the short term there is a trade-off often that media companies make between economics and quality. And in the long term, good journalism is good business.
But absolutely.
In the short term, there's a conflict. And Wall Street's orientation, as John Morton said earlier, is increasingly short term. So that's the rub. And Wall Street, it's not just. And you said earlier, I think what the host said earlier that, you know, aren't the people on Wall Street smart enough? Don't they realize that long-term quality can breed prosperity? Well, the truth is that while we must manage companies for the long term, McClatchy's existed since 1857, Wall Street and capital, money that is, has the ability to move to other sectors and other industries. So as they take short-term look, if they don't see the short-term too rosy for newspaper companies, they can move to complete other industries, oil.
And then, Gary, it should be pointed out their investment dollars are no longer available for you to do your journalism. Connection listeners, profit versus what you know in a democracy. 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK. DeWitt is on the line.
Yes.
DeWitt, thank you. Go right ahead.
Hello.
Hello, you're with us.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. First of all, I want to say I'm a journalist, and I have worked in newspapers for over 20 years, including the ex-Washington Post and the ex-Miami News. And I just want to let Mr. Harris know that cries went up from all my past and present colleagues for your integrity to stand up. You were the one heard voice in the industry, and you were so respected and so cheered for being a voice of conscience.
Thank you very much. That means a great deal to me.
Well, it meant a great deal for just one person standing up. The point I want to make is that nobody disputes the fact that stockholders have a right to make money, but where is the balance between making a profit and greed? And I've worked for papers that Ottawa chain, as a matter of fact, that wanted to make 31%. I don't even think Warren Buffett is offering that sort of return in the market. Where is it that the line is drawn with against greed and the quality? It's just so sad to see news pages down and to see younger people hired who, you know, have to ask the question, is China a world power? It's horrifying to see the dumbing down for the sake of saving bucks, and it's a great expense and loss to readers.
DeWitt, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, let me put it to our guests a little bit more specifically than that, if I may, DeWitt. What can we do about it? Remember, we got this First Amendment lurking over there that says the law can't mess with what these people choose to do at the freedom of the press. But Frank Blethyn, who owns Suki's paper, suggests the public trust is so big that we're not talking pork bellies here. We're talking facts, and perhaps the fiduciary laws for shareholders in this industry ought to be different. And Jay, you yourself said, quoting, press freedom is such an essential resource to our democracy that it should not be managed according to the demands of the financial markets. How do you get at that legally to make this more than just hand-wringing?
Well, I'm not sure that it is in the end, in the arena of law, that you will find the answer. I think it is more likely in the arena of public opinion. And that is why I think it is so important for the public to come to understand this issue more fully and to engage the issue. In an odd sort of way, the public owns the media, because if the public were ever to disown a media company, which is to say to stop subscribing, to stop tuning in.
And it's happening in every industry, significant down.
That media company would be seriously harmed and threatened. And so I would very much like to see a greater public awareness of what communities and readers and audiences should expect from news organizations, and greater engagement of those communities with their local news organizations, demanding what they have every right in a democracy to expect of that one business that stands alone in the Constitution, protected for a particular purpose.
Gary, how do we get it changed to take this beyond the hand-wringing?
I would second what Jay said, and to further that, I would say I think it's important for the managers of media companies, and we're speaking specifically of newspaper companies here, to take a longer-term view, to not be to transcend the short-term view of Wall Street. We tell our shareholders to take a longer-term view, that if you're in it for the short term, you probably shouldn't own McClatchy.
Hey, you met with them yesterday. What'd they say back when you said that?
Well, shareholder meetings aren't very well attended in person. It's mainly by proxy. But when we speak to Wall Street through analyst meetings in New York, I think by and large the shareholders of McClatchy understand. I mean, now and then we take actions in any given year that do not maximize profits in that year, but work to the long-term growth of the company. And it's an orientation that perhaps we have a little easier time handling at McClatchy because we have two tiers of stock and we're still privately controlled, even though publicly traded. But if we can't take that long-term perspective, if we can't have that long-term perspective, I'm afraid we are going to have these boom and bust cycles, as I said, which take readers and employees on a roller coaster, and I think are detrimental to the long-term quality of journalism.
Gary, thank you. I want to bring in another listener here. Walter, you're on the line. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Hi, guys. I've been in the newspaper business 50 years this year, so I've seen a few changes. Today I spend all my time online at Cape Cod Today, which is my latest little venture, which is an online newspaper on Cape Cod. I'd like to quote a couple other newspaper people. Somebody quoted A.J. Liebling. That was H.L. Mencken that said, nobody ever lost money underestimating the taste of the American public. And Claire Booth Lou said, or it was either her or Gertrude Stein said, the money is always out there. Only the pockets change. What I've seen in my lifetime in journalism, in newspapers, has been the newspaper industry not taking advantage of every new trend that's come along. in 1940, newspapers had 94% of all the money spent in America to reach consumers. The last report I saw 5 years ago, the NAA and the editor and publisher reported it was down to 18%. I suggest this because you guys are lazy. You'd rather bellyache to Wall Street and your bosses, and instead of doing it the old hard way, which is get enough people out in the streets selling your content.
Walter, let's get to the question.
The content is all you have to do is sell advertising, promote a product like that you have. You have content. You're not doing your job as businessmen. As publishers, your job is to get advertising to pay the bills so you can hire new newspapers. It all goes up that way.
Walter, thank you. Gary.
Well, I don't know which it is. Earlier we were too rich and too successful, and now we're too pathetic as business people. The truth is, newspapers have lost share overall because we've had the introduction of new media. We've had television, we've had radio, we have internet, we have a proliferation of sources, but we still are the largest local media in terms of local advertising dollars by far, and have a very important position in terms of presenting quality journalism so people can make informed decisions in a democracy.
Suki, you get the last word here as time winds down, because you're still on the desk every morning fighting the fight. Jay has resigned in conscience, and Gary's dealing with shareholders, and you're on the line representing the people who are making the choices that inform the public. What do you see as the outlook?
The only thing that we in the newsroom can do to address this is to try and do the greatest, best journalism we can every day. And I know thousands of journalists across the country who are doing that, despite the fact that they're belt tightening, despite the fact that there are more hurdles to climb over, and doing great journalism and demonstrating not just to the readers but also to the business interests. What a great newspaper is about and can be, I think, is also part of the answer in the equation.
It will be a challenge for this unregulated dispute to come to a head without the law interfering, which it can't under the First Amendment. But we can only encourage our listeners to read the newspaper a little bit more and a little bit more carefully and think about this as time goes on. Many thanks to my guest, Jay Harris, former publisher of the San Jose Mercury News, Suki Dardarian, assistant managing editor for the Seattle Times, and Gary Pruitt, a brave CEO of the McClatchy Newspaper Company, talking about this. And earlier, of course, we spoke with newspaper industry analyst John Morton. To continue the newspaper business conversation, you can visit our website, theconnection.org. I'm David Ropeek. You are listening to The Connection on NPR.
This is WBUR.